I won't reintroduce Don Ruzicka from near Viking, so about 40 minutes from here, or 45, depending how fast you drive, I guess. Because part of his story will unfold as he tells the story. And so, but actually, Don is one of the most important faculty members of Augustana. He just doesn't get paid by Augustana, but he has been mentoring and tutoring and supporting an amazing amount of students in rethinking their life and actually rethinking their connection to the land and to agriculture, and actually motivated people to say, hey, we want to start farming. So, and our plan, our secret plan that Don and I will have to discuss over coffee, is how do we actually get in to be able to mentor more people so they actually get living experience of this alternative way, actually the traditional way of farming, which is not what is called traditional today. So, because I think that's the crucial skills for all of you for survival, is to have a different way of dealing with the land. And we need people who have the actual experience, and rather than people coming in and making all their mistakes, everyone makes mistakes, but starting from scratch making all your mistakes, it's actually good to have worked with somebody. So our daughter Erica and Andrew, for example, worked for 2 years here in Gala Gardens in an organic market garden before they started, you know, raising their own food in Vancouver, and now they're actually moving onto a farm on Vancouver Island, producing, you know, whatever, everything from orchard to vegetables to chickens and pigs and whatever. And they will, of course, talk to Don again and say, actually, how many pigs can we handle this? Anyhow, so, but that's what we need, actually. Like, I think nobody should be allowed to graduate from university if they don't have any of the life skills. I mean, Natasha's knitting, so that's one of the life skills. You know, but no, the basic survival. Leah usually wears something that she made herself, etc. Leslie makes her own music. So everybody has to develop some life skills of stuff that you do yourself that you're not dependent on. And Allison knows lots of things. I give a long list of all the things that Allison does. Anyhow, but we wanted to listen to Don today. Aside from being an amazing movie maker, and every time my bike craps out, then Allison saves it. Okay.
Can we get one leg on here?
Pardon?
Can we get one leg on here?
Yes, we can.
Cool. There you go.
Does that work? Yeah, we can still see Ronna. Perfect. Thank you, Don, for coming.
Okay, well, hello, everybody. It's good to be back. I think I know at least half of you here, and I'm going to apologize up front for any repetition because I know some of you have heard what I've had to say before. And
we learned by repetition.
Pardon me?
We learned by repetition.
And thank you for the invitation again, Dietmar. I'm humbled to be here. Well, when Dietmar asked me to come and speak, he said that perhaps a good title for your topic would be The Transformation of Farming, Finding the Courage to Chart a New Path. But I'm a bit of a rebel, and I figure I'm pretty innovative and creative, so I decided to call it Transition of Farming, Finding the Courage to Chart a New Path. But
very rebellious of you.
On the way up here, driving up here today, and by the way, these books, you can come and have a look at after. All of the authors of these books have influenced the journey of our farm. So feel free to come and have a look at them later. But one book I forgot, and probably one of the more important ones, is it's called The Long Haul. And if I could get back home, I would probably call this The Long Haul, because that's what it is. And The Long Haul is a book about Miles Horton. He grew up in Tennessee, Arkansas, in there somewhere, in a coal mining area, and a lot of the farmers worked for peanuts. They got emphysema. They had all kinds of health problems. They were poor. They died. And his goal in life was to get an education, come back, and help those people. So he got an education, came back, and started the Highlander School. And he advertised that his school was open and that he was going to help the people rise above what the corporations and the wealthy people were doing to them and give them a better life. So he opens his doors, and eight people show up. They're farm people, miners, etc. And he talks a little bit, and he's talking and talking just like I am. And Finally, a lady says, look, I came here to learn something, and you told us you were going to help us to get out of this mess. And he said, I am. Well, she says, how are we going to do it? And he said, the answer is from among the people around this table. And I really believe that the answers to a lot of our problems are not going to be given to us by governments. It's going to be people like you, people in this room. So that's kind of the basis and some of the motivation for what we've done on our farm. So this story is about sharing the journey. I told Dittmar I usually read my talks because I usually have exactly 30 minutes and they want it exactly 30 minutes. So it could be 60, it could be 35, it could be... Well, I know it's 60, he's going to shut me off. So. But I told him this is going to be more from the heart for most of, than most of my talks. So Dittmar asked me in his email, what gave me the courage or the hope to make the transition to how we farm now? And I guess in looking at that, I got to really bare my soul and go back to my childhood. I was brought up in a family. My folks, our family was Catholic, and I remember my mom teaching all of us kids the catechism of the church, in other words, the rules and regulations. And we prayed as a family every night, 5 days a week. They gave us the weekends off because we spent an hour and a half in church, so we thought that was pretty good. And we... I remember very, very vividly that in the prayers every evening, there would be prayers of petition. In other words, as farmers, Lord, please help us have a good crop this year. Please let the prices be high. The price of the livestock be high. The garden, would the garden be good? And that was great. But at the end of the year, when harvest came, thank you for the bountiful harvest, if it was bountiful. But also, if the harvest was poor, if we'd been almost hailed out, there was still thank you and gratitude for what we did get. And that has helped me to make this transition because it has not always been bountiful. And I always think back that my parents were grateful for the very, very small things in life. And also a great motivator is fear. When we... hit the wall in 1995. Well, let me go back. My wife and our three kids moved to the farm in 1983. We're a third-generation farm, which my grandparents moved from North Dakota in 1913. So it's 100 years. It's a century this year that my mom's side of the family have been on the farm. And it's interesting. Her maiden name was Swoboda, and that's Czechoslovakian. And if you translate that into English, it means freedom. I love it. Or also, some Czech people call it peace, so I like both of those. Now, Ruzica is Ruzica, and I'm not so proud of that. It means little rose.
What's wrong with little roses?
Spring sliced little roses.
Exactly.
So here we are, 1983. We've moved to the farm. We're living in the house built in 1917. Life is good. We farmed what was called the conventional model in those days, and I think that most of you would call it the industrial model now, and that's what I refer to it as. Very high input. And by 1995, our operating loan was going up $5,000 a year. The sad reality was that we weren't making it. And we had over $200,000 in debt. And Marie and I had that conversation. It was October after the harvest was done, after breakfast, kids were in school, and we kind of looked at each other and we said, hey, this isn't working. What do we do? Well, I was 47 years of age. So at 47 years of age, with not very little post-secondary education, the fear was, I really don't know what I can do other than maybe be night watchman at the Forsberg coal mine or something like that. And so I was searching and hoping that something would come up. And the next day I went to get the mail, and as I picked the mail up at the post office, I was throwing the stuff away, that junk mail, and I was just throwing this one in the garbage, and it said, would you like to get off the agribusiness treadmill? And I thought, hey, somebody here has been listening to my thoughts. So I read it, and it said, if you are interested, come to Camrose about a week from that date, and we'd like to share a little bit of information about holistic management. So Marie was substitute teaching that day, so I went, and there were 72 people showed up. It was at the regional exhibition place there. And the facilitator of that meeting said that if we're going to give this course in cameras, we have to have 7 families. So it was very coincidental that 7 families signed up. And by families, it could have been a husband and wife. There were bachelors there. There were families actually brought their 3 kids who were in high school or finished high school to hear about how do we get off the agribusiness treadmill. So it was an 8-day course. Started in November of 95. 2 days in November, 2 days in December, 2 days in January, 2 days in February. And on the way home from the last day of the course, Marie and I were still $250,000 in debt, but we were excited because we had learned about some new ways to look at the land. And Dietmar mentioned that if I'm a grain farmer, I have 1,000 acres, what do I do? Well, we were grain farmers and we had cattle also, and we had 7 acres. And we knew exactly what we were going to do. We were going to get out of high input agriculture and try and pay our debt down and get back to having a quality of life. And the facilitator, the very first day of the course, of course, nobody in the room really knew anybody. So he said, I'm gonna throw out an icebreaker. And he said, I want you to think and talk in groups. What would you like people to hear as they walk by your open coffin at your funeral? So we broke into about 3 groups, and he gave us 20 minutes to discuss it. And there was a lot of discussion. Called everybody back, and he said, well, let's hear it, folks. Well, most of us said that we would like people to look at us as they walk by our coffin and say, that person was a really good neighbor. He coached my kids' hockey team. She taught home ec to our kids. She was a Brownie leader. If I needed help any time of the day or night, this person was there. So all those nice, warm, fuzzy things. Now, there were people in the group that were anywhere from 50 down to 29 years of age. And the younger fellow that was a bachelor, he didn't have anything to offer. So the facilitator pushed him a little bit, and he says, would you like to add something? And he kind of looked, and he says, well, yeah, sure, he said. The first person to walk by my coffin, I'd like them to point at me and say, look, he's moving. So, and we all laughed too. But I thought about that on the way home, and I thought that we are all at different stages in our lives. We're at different ages. And somebody once said to me, we are not the people that people see. We are much different. We have a core. And that core, that vulnerability, does not often get exposed. So, but that was it was a great icebreaker. I've been asked many times, how did you feel when you hit the wall and realized that you had to either change what you were doing or cut your losses and get out? And I said, I felt that my dignity was completely compromised. And it made me think of 1977. Marie and I were living on Vancouver Island. I was driving down the island highway, and I was listening to the radio. And there was this song came on, and it was called The Homefront Heroes. And the chorus line to that song was, your broken dreams and your memories are the only proof that you've even lived at all. And I thought, how sad that somebody has actually lived a life like that. How broken they must feel. And when we hit the wall and started thinking about the alternatives, I felt the pain and the emotion of the line in that song. And it was very, very powerful. But started praying harder again, and we started moving on. Where did the hope come from to chart our course? Well, the holistic management gave us a whole new way of looking at agriculture. Joel Salatin, I'm sure most of you have heard of him. He's from Swoop, Virginia. He's spoken Alberta probably 3 or 4 times last year. He started that grass-based model of raising chickens and turkeys and hogs and on pasture, grass-finished beef, being kind to the land, caring for the land. And a video of his operation was shown, on one of the days of the course, and we really started thinking hard at that because we didn't need a $350,000 combine. We didn't need a four-wheel drive tractor. We didn't need a lot of that expensive equipment. And also, we decided we were going to go organic because we knew that we had to have some kind of a niche. And so we thought, well, let's go with this grass-based model. So we started building chicken shelters and slowly getting into this whole grass-based different way of doing things. Now, the 700 acres of our farm, we decided to seed everything to pasture, and we sold 2/4 of land to pay off our debt. We sold all of our granaries, we sold our combine, we sold all of our grain harvesting equipment, and we had finished the course in 1996. By May 1st of 1999, we went into farm credit here in Camrose, and we took a check in, and our land was, we were debt-free. And that is one of the most memorable and happiest days of my life. And we headed full speed ahead into this agrarian way of farming that Wendell Berry talks about. And Wendell Berry is, he's just the most. University of Calgary invited him to come up to speak at their campus probably 7 or 8 years ago. And he said that, I just have so much work to do here in America that thank you for the invitation, but he said, I just can't come. But I would go in a heartbeat, and I would pay a pretty good dollar to hear him speak because he's such a knowledgeable man, and he's a holistic thinker of the optimum degree.
I invited him to come to Camrose.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. And Roger Epp, of course, has always used his book and taught and whatever. And first of all, you can't invite him by computer because he doesn't have one, right? So we had to use snail mail. And he also said, you know, thank you very much. You know, you can read most of the things. I don't have any new thoughts. Read it. Talk about it. That's what we've been doing ever since.